Welcome to the second season of the Doc Industry Podcast. Like in 2020, the podcast was realized in collaboration with the What's Up with Docs podcast and the programmers of Color Collective. Join us for discussions on topics such as the limited representation of brown LGBTQ plus stories in the cinematic space, the lack of inclusivity in the mainstream press, and the possibilities of Caribbean avant-garde cinema. The Doc Industry podcasts are funded by Creative Europe, the City of Leipzig, MDM, and BKM. Thank you to our partners and collaborators for their contribution. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to this podcast. My name is Jonathan Ali. I am a film curator and programmer from Trinidad and Tobago, based in London. And this is a podcast that I have, I think provocatively, entitled Towards a Caribbean Avant-Garde? In which I will be speaking with two Caribbean filmmakers about the possibilities of Caribbean filmmaking beyond the conventional, beyond the ordinary, and towards perhaps something more, you know, whatever that might be. So I am very thrilled to be joined today by Miriam Charles. Hi, Miriam.
Hi, how are you?
I am fine, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Miriam is a director, producer, and director of photography living in Montreal. I'm reading directly from her bio here, and then we can unpick it maybe if we need to. She has produced and photographed several short fiction films as well as feature films. She is also the director of several short films, which have been presented in various festivals in Quebec and internationally. She is working on her first feature-length documentary, Cette Maison, a fantastic series called Je Vais, Je Viens. And I see Netflix is attached to that. We definitely want to talk a little bit about that. And a feature-length fiction film, Le Marabout. She is currently artist in residence at Concordia University and on the board of directors at RIDM, Dazibao and La Coupe Video de Montreal. And I've added this in at the end because it's not on the bio. She is a 2021 Union Docs Fellow that was recently announced. So congratulations, Miriam, for that.
Thank you. Thanks.
And I want to note that nowhere in this bio does it say that you are from Haiti or of Haitian descent, but you are, and your work is very much concerned with Haiti.
Yeah.
So we will talk about that. But before we do, I'll go to Amir's bio now. And it begins: as a film student at the University of the West Indies in Trinidad, Amir Arthur Vallon's short documentary, Who I Say I Am, screened at the Trinidad and Tobago Film Festival in 2016, where it won the United Nations Award for Best Emerging Documentary Filmmaker and also the award for Best Trinidad and Tobago Short Documentary Film. Amir is a recent graduate of the Escuela Internacional de Cine y Televisión, EICTV, in San Antonio de los Baños, Cuba, where he specialized in documentary film direction. In his time there, he made over 15 short films, some of which have competed both locally and internationally at film festivals. His most recent short, The Whisper of the Leaves, had its world premiere at the Sheffield Documentary Film Festival, and also screened at the Third Horizon Film Festival, where I am, for, you know, full disclosure, I am director of programming. So I was happy to program the film there. And I was also this year a program advisor for the Sheffield Docfest. So I had a hand in having the film at Sheffield as well. So that I'm saying all that just for full disclosure, so everybody knows that I know Amir, I know Miriam, I have curated their work. I'm very pleased to do so. So that's why I've invited them to be here, because I know their work and I am a supporter of their work. And then the last line of Amir's bio, which I really love, and we'll talk about that too, is: currently, Amir also operates as a part-time floral caretaker at a local flower market, which I think is a beautiful thing. And an interesting thing too, in terms of, you know, when we talk about making a living as a filmmaker, you know, can you just make a living, you know, from your films alone? And if not, you know, what do you do otherwise? So again, welcome both. So this is meant to be a talk about Caribbean cinema. And I imagine a lot of people, you know, listening in will probably wonder, well, what is Caribbean cinema? Because for so many people, even though, you know, Caribbean filmmakers have been making films for a long time now, a lot of people, you know, probably have never seen a Caribbean film, or if they have, they've seen something Cuban, you know. Or recently I had someone, I asked someone if they've ever seen a Caribbean film, and they said, well, I've seen Soy Cuba, which yes, it was made in Cuba, but it's actually a Soviet film. So it's not really a Caribbean film. But yeah, for most people, it's either something Cuban or they've seen The Harder They Come from Jamaica, right? But they've probably not seen anything else. So they probably really don't know what Caribbean cinema is. But there are lots of Caribbean filmmakers making films. And more those films are, you know, circulating on the festival circuit, at least, which I know, you know, are two places where both of you, you know, are really getting your work seen currently. So maybe you could both start by kind of talking about how you came to be filmmakers, how you came, you know, to want to be filmmakers. What was it, you know, that led you to filmmaking? And, you know, what was the background that you came out of in terms of, you know, not just your personal background, but like, you know, the society? Because if you come from the Caribbean, you know, certainly the English-speaking Caribbean, you know, when you think of cinema, you think of mostly Hollywood, because that's what you see in the cinemas. That's what, you know, you grow up watching on TV, on cable television. Certainly that's how it was for me growing up. And then now, you know, there are all the platforms. And again, it's mostly, you know, US content. I hate the word, but anyway, there it is. Although that is diversifying somewhat. But, you know, cinema in cinemas really means Hollywood. So how did all that sort of, you know, impinge on you in terms of, you know, your development and your decision to become a filmmaker? Miriam, maybe we could start with you, because you actually didn't grow up in the Caribbean, but you grew up as, you know, a Caribbean person. So what was that like for you?
I think that from my background, from a young age, I grew up watching, you know, Hollywood film dubbed in French for the most part. But for me, it was a family experience, because we were all together watching films. I think it was a matter also of my parents controlling what we were seeing from a young age. They wanted to be sure that we were not exposed to violence or to things that we were too young to watch. So from a young age, the experience or the feeling of watching movies with my parents, my sisters, and everybody was always talking over the movie, like explaining the stories and questioning everything. And I think it stayed with me, because questioning the story, the story that you're actually watching live, and, you know, finding answers while watching the movies kind of stays with me when I became a filmmaker. So I think I wanted to reproduce that feeling of being together as a family and watching movies. And also from a young age, yes, I grew up in Canada, but I was obsessed with, you know, going back to Haiti. Each winter, I was like, you know, picking up fight with my father, because I was like, why are we here? It's so cold and stuff. So yeah, from a young age, I knew that when I grew up, I would go back. And the minute that I was old enough, I went back and with a camera and started to, you know, to make films. Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting, because you're growing up in this in one particular context, and, you know, we could call it a sort of developed society where you have these opportunities in terms of access, right, to not only cinema, you know, there are not just multiplexes and so on, but, you know, there are art house cinemas, there are cinematheques, festivals,
yeah,
you know, where you can see, you know, a wide range of cinema. And then, you know, no doubt that was part of your experience. But then also in terms of becoming a filmmaker, you know, again, access to film schools, to equipment, in your case in particular, analog equipment, because you shoot on 60mm film. So, you know, you have those opportunities, you know, which in many parts of the Caribbean don't exist, you know, they don't, that culture doesn't exist. And that access, you know, things are changing, of course. There are film schools now in the Caribbean, but the culture still very much has a long way to go in terms of, you know, development. So what was that like for you then, you know, deciding, okay, I'm going to, you know, I live here in Canada. This is where I've grown up. But, you know, I'm from somewhere else. And that's the place that, you know, interests me in terms of, you know, making films, and then going there to make films. What, you know, how did that work for you?
It was very simple in a way that I still have family there, so they would welcome me there. And it was always my plan. I became a filmmaker to go back to AV to make film about the country, because the way that AD is portrayed in the media is not very, you know, in a positive light. And the first time that I went back, I realized that everything that I saw in, you know, newspapers or television about AD was not necessarily true. It's such a beautiful country. Amazing people, and I wanted to show that in my films. I never really thought about access. Maybe maybe because I grew up with a lot of privilege in a way. But I knew it was important to go back and film images of the country in 16mm, because I did not see a lot of images or film shot on film from 80, and for me it was very important to do that, to contribute in that sense.
I'm also wondering, in terms of not only format but in terms of the actual form that you use, if this desire not to reproduce or to counter, you know, the traditional images in the media that have created this narrative around Haiti, you know, led you to the form that you use, which is, you know, a non-linear narrative form in your films. Your films are, you know, quite poetic. There's no, you know, conventional narrative in your films. So maybe we can get into that. But I want to bring Amir in here, because his films also, as a documentarian, he does not make conventional documentaries, and so I'm interested, Amir, in how you came to adopt the form that you work with growing up in Trinidad, because you're born and raised in Trinidad, and you went to the university there to study film, and then you went to the film school in Cuba. So you have an experience of what film school in Trinidad is, but also in Cuba and what life is like there, because you spent 3 years in Cuba. So that's a fair chunk of time. So maybe you could say a little bit about, you know, what it was like growing up in Trinidad and how you came to see movies and get interested in making the kinds of films that you make.
Yeah. Well, for me, like you said, I grew up in Trinidad, but I never, nobody in Trinidad thinks, well, back a couple of years ago, now things are changing a little bit, but back then nobody thought about, you know, being a filmmaker as a career. In high school, I took the opportunity to make a short film for the Trinidad and Tobago secondary school competition, film competition. And it was just a thing that I did for fun with some of my friends, but I liked the experience, and also I liked making like short movies, short videos, like stuff for like YouTube and stuff back then in 2012, 2013, because I like philanthropic work. Before I thought about doing film or anything, I just wanted to do good things for other people. And because I did a lot of volunteering and stuff at that time and throughout my life, but especially around that time. And when I did this competition, the secondary schools competition, and had the chance to make a film, and I saw the, I had a glimpse of like what the entire experience was like, bringing all of the elements together to make a film and showing it to an audience and seeing their reactions, what they liked, what they didn't like and stuff. That is the experience that kind of like shifted my perspective a little bit, because prior to that, like I had a quote, I heard a quote from a writer, the writer of the book Fight Club. He quoted one time, for young people to change their culture, they have to write the books, make the films, paint the art and things like that. And I wanted to change my culture at that time. I wanted to do something to contribute to society. And making the films was the best opportunity that I saw that I could do so, because it was kind of like a conglomeration of all different types of art. And from there I started. That was my start. I wanted to do, wanted to change people's perspectives and all of that. I wanted to help people and all of that. And then the logical next step was to go study at the University of the West Indies in their film program there. And that was really like a starting point to meet people, to see what were other people's perspectives, making films in Trinidad and stuff like that. Learning about the industry, because I had no experience or knowledge about anything related to film. And from there, I had the opportunity to go to Cuba, because one of my films won some awards at the film festival in Trinidad. So I heard about the scholarship opportunity to go to Cuba. So I took the opportunity to... going to Cuba seemed to me like the most difficult thing I could do at that time, because in Trinidad, a couple of years ago in Trinidad, there was not a lot of mixing of like Latin American and Trinidadian culture. Because I think in Trinidad, what people don't realize is in the English-speaking Caribbean and the Spanish-speaking Caribbean are so different in terms of their culture and the way they interact and stuff like that. And especially like when I went to Cuba, the Caribbean meant Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Cuba. When I came to Trinidad, the Caribbean was Barbados, Trinidad, Jamaica, Guyana. So it's not, people don't like associate the entire Caribbean and all of the different languages and cultures and stuff like that. So the most difficult thing that I thought that I could do at that time was go to Cuba and immerse myself in something completely different to what I was accustomed to, because coming back to Trinidad, I realized, before I went to Cuba, in Trinidad, I realized like I didn't know where I was going to go. I felt like I hit like some form of glass ceiling when my film won the two awards at the Trinidad Film Festival. And I was thinking to myself, like, this is, what could I do next? Because I didn't see like an opportunity for me to like grow beyond what I had already reached there. Like I could like make a feature film or something like that, but I didn't see opportunities to learn unless I left and immersed myself into something new. And that's what I did in Cuba. But upon going to Cuba, like my whole perspective shifted of like life and everything, because in Cuba I met people from all over the world, like every continent, from Egypt, Greece, Mozambique, all over the world. And learning about people from different cultures all over the world changes your perspective of everything. And at that point in time, while I was studying in Cuba, I realized like I didn't want to try to help people anymore in the sense of how I wanted to do before while I was in Trinidad. Because I heard a quote from Tarkovsky, Andrew Tarkovsky, show them life and they will find within themselves the means to assess and appreciate it. So in Cuba, my journey was more about learning about myself and like why I really wanted to like try to help people, why I wanted to make films and stuff like that. And the more I learned about myself, the more I could have connected with other people. Because in Cuba, it was like the complete opposite to me. of and where I grew up and stuff like that. And being able to connect with them on like a human level, emotional level, like before I even was able to like speak the language properly, learning to communicate with people helped me to direct better because I was understanding how to help people relate to me, how I can relate to people and how to help them understand that like we are all the same no matter like where we come from, have things that connect all of us together. And all of this like helped me to direct better and shift my perspective of what I wanted to do going forward into the future, which I still not completely 100% sure yet. I feel like I'm just on part of my journey, but that's where I am right now.
It's interesting you mentioned two quotes. You quoted the author of the novel of Fight Club. And then you went on to quote Tarkovsky, which is a wonderful range there. But it speaks really to two sides, you know, the two sides of cinema, really, kind of, when you think about it. And that kind of, you know, dichotomy that exists, you know, the two cinemas, if you will. And I really want to kind of get into that a bit more because, you know, that's really at the heart of, you know, a lot of what, you know, is happening in cinema and a place like, you know, the Caribbean, where there are, you know, these attempts to make a cinema that is different from the, you know, from the mainstream, from the norm. So Miriam, I want to come back to you. And this idea of, you know, wanting to counter these stereotypical, these damaging media representations of Haiti that have created this particular narrative, is that one of the reasons why you wanted to, you know, shall we say, refuse conventional filmmaking language in terms of how you tell the stories that you tell, or the, you know, create the portraits that you create of Haiti?
I wouldn't say refuse, because, you know, I do appreciate, you know, mainstream cinema. I do watch a lot of Hollywood mainstream film, TV series. But I think the minute that I, you know, started to study in film school, that I wouldn't be able to reproduce it, because that's not the way my mind works. So I knew from the beginning that I wasn't trying to replicate something that I you know, grew up with and that I loved. But also, I cannot really escape. Yes, I grew up in Canada, but I was surrounded by, you know, Asian, my family and friends. And I just, there's a lot of people who say that Haiti is the land of poets, even people who are not like professional poets. Everybody in a way is a poet, the way that people tell stories in a very intimate and personal way. Immediately they're very visual, you get carried away with the stories. Since I grew up in that environment, when I started to write stories, I wrote the story how I knew how to tell them, like an Asian person you can go like all over the place, but at the same time you know, you get a feeling of something very, very personal and intimate. Yeah, maybe I was in a little bit in a, you know, opposition. I won't say that I wanted to provoke, but in a way maybe, because I wanted to shake things up a little bit about how the people perceive Haiti. And it's very funny that you point out in my bio that, you know, there's no mention of me being Asian. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. And I guess it says a little bit about me, because a lot in a way, because even if I wanted so much to go back to Haiti, even live there and make films there, a part of me also wanted to, you know, fit in Quebec and in Canada. And, you know, there's a lot of talk here about, you know, diversity, inclusion, and be part of. So I guess that's what I did with my bio. Oh my God, I need to change that.
Okay. Please don't change it on my account. You know, I mean, you know, maybe you are just so comfortable with who you are and what you do that you don't feel the need to foreground it, you know, that you don't have to say it directly. Because again, you know, all you have to do is see your work and you know that it, you know,
Haiti
runs through it. But okay, sure, if you want to change it, you know, then fine. But you make an interesting point when you talked about, you know, why you decided to make the films you make the way you make them. Well, I mean, one of the things you didn't say, and I don't know if this was also a consideration for you, but it surely would be for, you know, so many people working in the Caribbean, you know, conventional filmmaking, certainly conventional fiction filmmaking. And if you're going to make features, it's not cheap, right? I mean, it's resource intensive, it's labor intensive. And to make a certain kind of narrative feature film, you know, you have to have a certain, you know, there have to be, you know, there are industrial kinds of standards that, you know, in the Caribbean just kind of don't exist. And, you know, making narrative features, because they do get made, let's not pretend that they don't. But often it's, you know, it's working on a wing and a prayer. It's kind of hoping that, you know, everything you want to work will work, right? Because, you know, there aren't, you know, established film industries, except, you know, Cuba, you know, has a system. And now to an extent we're seeing in a place like the DR, they're really kind of establishing themselves and, you know, they're making any number of, you know, of films now, and you could say that they've got a system there. But Amir, I mean, your decision to make the films that you make the way that you make them, I mean, how did you because I assume, like Miriam, that you watch all kinds of films, you know, but you know, you have made a decision to make a certain kind of documentary. It's a sort of you know, you work in a very observational, meditative style. You mentioned Tarkovsky. I know he's one of your influences. You know, again, very poetic, not linear narratives, you know. How did you, you know, come to, you know, find that way of working? And, you know, how did, you know, going from the Trinidad context and going to the film school there and, you know, being part of, you know, that society and then going to Cuba and, you know, how did that influence you, if you know at all?
Yeah, so for me, when I started, like I spoke about the secondary school competition before, when I started like making little short videos, unlike Miriam, I wanted to stand out as much as possible. Like I didn't want to fit in at all, although I do like watch all kinds of movies and all kinds of cinema. For different reasons. Sometimes I might want to think more, sometimes I might want to relax. So I watch different kinds of stuff. But in terms of the work that I wanted to make, I wanted to stand out as much as possible. But when I just started out, it wasn't as authentic. Like I wanted to stand out, but it was for kind of some of the wrong reasons. It was more of like a an ego thing. Like I wanted to show who I was in the world. But I mean, I was a teenager. I was like 16, 17 at that time. So that's what I was doing at that time. But when I started to go to like the University of the West Indies and started to find my style and my voice and like what kind of stories I wanted to tell, the kind of films that I wanted to do were kind of like shaped by my life experiences at that time, which was still not a lot. I was like 19, 20. And when I went to film school in Cuba was when things really started to change. I really started to find my voice and the kind of films that I wanted to do. I knew what kind of films I wanted to do because of, especially I think like I owe it a lot to the teachers that I had, especially in that school in the EICTV in Cuba. They really helped me understand that, like to direct people properly, I had to know who I was to be able to help them to relate to me and communicate, to be able to communicate my ideas to them properly. So in doing so, my films became less about like me and more about whatever it is that I wanted to show, the people themselves, the places, and my perspective of what I wanted to show. So like, the types of films that I do are poetic because that's the way I see the world. So like I can't shoot it in another way because it would just be like pretentious. If I try to shoot it in a more commercial way, something that would appeal more to people, but it would be like out of sync with how I view reality. So it would come off as not authentic and more pretentious. So whenever like most of my films barely have dialogue, because in life in general, I'm a quiet person who barely talks. I more observe people and I look at how people interact using their body language and facial expressions and stuff. So in my films, that's what I try to show, because that's the way I see the world in that sense. So in all of my films, like I see people, I approach people to do films with them based on like if I see pieces of themselves in me. So like I did a film with a 8-year-old boy, I saw myself in him. So when I approach him, I could be able to communicate with him, relate to him on like a personal level, even though at that time I barely spoke Spanish. We communicated and related and we connected really closely because I saw myself in him, he saw himself in me, even though I was like 22, 23 and he was like 8. We connected. And then after I did a film with like a 60-something-year-old man, then a 85-year-old woman, and I saw pieces of myself in them. And when I communicated with them, they saw pieces of themselves in me. And because we could have connected on this level, I was able to bring those aspects of them out in the films. Even though like out of the films, they have so much more aspects of themselves, of their lives, that make them marvelous human beings. But like for the film, I had to like pinpoint and zone into specific things that I wanted to show for the story, based on like how I could relate to them. And because like in my films, I only showed what was important and not like to try to put everything in the film, which is like what a lot of commercial films do. They do too much and is not focused, because they try to appeal to everyone and instead they go too wide and not deep enough into connecting with people. So whenever like I do films, I try to connect to specific aspects of people and the way they interact with their world.
You both mentioned, you know, well, you certainly mentioned it, Amir. I mean, I think I was the one who used the word in relation to your filmmaking, Miriam, poetry. And, you know, you said that, you know, all Haitians are poets and it's something about Caribbean people in general, you know, Caribbean people, you know, do have this poetic nature, you know, and you see it, you know, expressed whether they are, you know, writing poetry, you know, or in various other ways in terms of, you know, expressing their creative sides. But that's also allied to a spirituality, because again, the Caribbean is also a very spiritual place. And it has always struck me, you know, we see it in the literature because, you know, we've produced, you know, Nobel Prize winning writers and poets. So it's there in the literature. It's there in the painting too, I suppose. But, you know, so much of the cinema that comes out of the Caribbean is just reproducing a kind of Hollywood type of cinema. And there's no poetry, there's no spirituality in any of this. And I'm wondering, but we are a spiritual people. We are a poetic people. Why is our cinema void of, you know, poetry? Why is it void of spirit? Is it that Hollywood just dominates everything in terms of cinema? And so, you know, is that the reason?
Maybe, probably, but also also because you have to ask yourself, you know, when you want to become a filmmaker, you know, for me, I knew it wasn't about the money, that, you know, I have several jobs to be, you know, to be able to do what I want to do. I guess if you go the mainstream, you know, route, there's more money, you can make a living out of it. It's easier in a way. Maybe that could explain it, you know, to kind of disconnect yourself from your spirituality to make money.
Well, it's easier, but only if you're successful, right?
Yeah, also.
You have to get there first, right? And that's the challenge, to get that, you know, to however you go about it, you know, to get that, you know, I don't know, contract or deal or whatever, whether it's with Netflix or whoever. I mean, you know, it's not easy. But I mean, what do you think?
I agree with Miriam. Me as well. Like, I never thought, even when I was just starting out, I never really thought about or making a career doing the types of films that I wanted to. I always figured that, well, I came from like humble beginnings as well. Like I grew up poor and I'm still poor, but I always like, I was comfortable with the little that I had. And especially going to Cuba, it made me even more humble because like in Cuba, I live with people, like so many of my friends who are Cuban, who even come from the wealthier parts of Cuba, like Havana and stuff. Sometimes the water might go and they wouldn't know when they get some back water. Like things like that shifts your perspective of like what is important and stuff. So when I came back to Trinidad and I heard people complaining about they don't have internet or their air condition isn't working, like it was like, what are you complaining about? People in Cuba didn't have internet for forever until like recently. So, but I mean, because I grew up poor as well, like I was comfortable working on anything. Like right now I'm a florist, as you mentioned earlier, I'm a florist part-time. I worked in market research. I do many different things as well to live. And this allows me to like not be clouded on the reasons why I want to make the films. It's very authentic, the reasons. And it is an interesting point because many people come to me because, you know, I've had some success with the work that I did from Trinidad, being from Trinidad. People from Trinidad come to me, especially film students from the university. They come and ask me like tips on how to like break through and become like more successful and take their career to the next level. But they always ask how to make money. Like there's always a part of how they want to live off of this. And I try to explain like the reasons why people would do it would be different. So if you want to make money, your reasoning, you'd have to look for people who found a way to break through making a different type of film. And I think coming back to your point about spirituality, yes, in the Caribbean, people are very spiritual in Cuba. You encounter spiritual people everywhere in Trinidad as well. People are very religious. The people, when they make films or art, they try to, because we don't have like too much, a lot of established like filmmakers and stuff in Trinidad who broke through, they look at people who they think are successful, which are more like Hollywood. And because I think that's the media that they are accustomed to consuming all of the time, they model that. And it's another point that I wanted to bring up, like the Caribbean perspective is something entirely that we could talk about, because some of my friends from Trinidad asked me while I was in Cuba if I'm still making films like a Trinidadian, or if when I come back to Trinidad, they ask like if you think your films from Cuba have a Caribbean perspective. And I was like, it's about Cuban people in a Cuban setting. Like, what else does it need to be to make it Caribbean? And people who are not accustomed or who haven't studied like film or are not like involved with too much with the filmmaking process would think, oh, Caribbean means like moving around the camera, having a lot of like rhythmic shots, having super saturated colors, things that they are accustomed seeing that means Caribbean. But Caribbean like means so much of different things. They have so much different facets. And the thing that I love to show, especially in films, are the little details that people don't think would matter. Like the type of poetry that I like to represent the cinema, the poetry of the little things of like in daily life that people think don't matter, but are really what matters. But to me, what mattered to me. I can only make films about things that I think representative of like of the way I see it. So it's difficult to talk about. But yeah, I hope like you got something from that.
That's absolutely beautiful. The poetry of the little things. I love that. And it made me think, you know, because yeah, you talked about this idea of filmmaking as a career, as a means of making money. Above and beyond just, you know, being able to make films, because it's an achievement in itself to have a body of work and to say you've made, you know, any number of films that you consider to be good films. But, you know, there is this idea among, you know, some people who make films that, well, no, the film also has to turn a profit. It has to, so that they can make a living off of it, right? And I'm wondering if, because, you know, so many people, not only in the Caribbean, but this is certainly something that I have found influences the aesthetic you see in so many Caribbean films, is that so many filmmakers in the Caribbean, you know, to be able to make a living, also make music videos, they make commercials, right? And that commercial aesthetic you can often see in their so-called creative work. And I wonder if, you know, that's something that Miriam, you said that, you know, you have a number of other jobs. I mean, do you do commercial video work? Amir, you work, you know, as you say, a florist, which I think is a much more useful a skill to have in terms of filmmaking than making music videos. I mean, do you also do, either of you also do, you know, not, you know, film work that is not personal to you?
No.
To make a living?
No, I don't. But I don't judge people who do, because, you know, you have to, you know, pay bills and I guess advance in a way in your career. But it's much about my personality. I'm like a shy person who don't really go out. I like, you know, staying with my family, close friends. So I don't really have the personality to, you know, do commercials and music video, because I don't, you know, I don't have a business card. I don't have a website. I just got a filmmaker demo like this year, because, you know, I had to. But I never wanted also to do that kind of work, because even if I grew up in Canada, I did not grow up with, you know, millions of dollars. And my parents, I was very lucky, because I saw my mom, you know, do a lot with so little. And it actually helped me when I became a filmmaker, because I knew that even with few dollars, I could achieve a lot. I just needed to be creative about it. And I don't think that I will ever direct a commercial. Yeah, even if somebody offers it to me, because, you know, that's not me.
For me, early on, like right when while I was studying in UA, and when I just came out of UA, I tried to do some like commercial work and stuff, and I hated it. I hated it so much. I felt like my life was being sucked out of me, just because you have no room to grow or tell proper stories, because people want the same thing. Like every wedding video that somebody wants is the same thing. They just want you to make them look good. And I knew that would just suck the life out of me. So when I stopped doing like commercial work and stuff like that, I felt like much better, because I felt like my creative energies were secret. And for me to be using my creative energies in a place where I don't get to like use them properly, I felt like I was being drained. And when I stopped doing that, and I could use like my physical energy, use my other energies towards working, and use my creative energies just towards making films that really mattered to me, or something else creative, doing something else creative that mattered to me, I felt like I was being getting a lot more energy and making a lot more out of my life like that. So no, but maybe in the future I will do some more commercial work, maybe, I don't know, depending on what it is. So maybe like sometimes family ask me to shoot stuff for them, and I shoot it for them because they are family.
But you can't say no to family in the Caribbean, can you?
<No. laughs>
they will disown you.
And they won the family discount, which is free. but it's another point that I wanted to make with you coming back to like different perspectives coming out of film school and trying to like make money as a filmmaker. It's a strange thing in UWI, University of the West Indies, when I studied there, a lot of the focus a lot of teachers taught me that to make a successful film means you have to get people in seats. So you have to make it in a way to get people to come and see it. When I went to Cuba and studied at Escuela Internacional de Cine, the whole perspective was different. The whole perspective was, it had nothing at all to do with business. For the 3 years that I studied there, had zero in focus on what it is to make like a business-oriented film or anything like that. It was all about making a good quality film. And when I came back to Trinidad, I felt like I was kind of lacking in the business department because for 3 years I learned how to make a great quality film, but I didn't know how to market it, distribute it, all of that, because my focus was solely like on direction. And I would always depend on in Cuba, on my producers to do that. My producers would do the producer's job. Going back to Trinidad, you have to do everything. It's not like elsewhere probably in the world, you know, you just direct. The producer will produce, distributor will distribute. Other people on your crew would do their jobs. In Trinidad, you have to learn to do so much of it yourself. And I think that kind of like muddies your thinking in a little bit, because like I had exercises in Cuba where I had to also produce. And when I had to produce the films that I would direct in, I felt like I couldn't focus on directing when I had to produce, because like the way I would think as a producer would be different than the way I would think as a writer and a director. And it was difficult, like trying to separate those things, because I didn't want to be, you know, somebody just to make films for people, to get people in seats. It would just make it too commercial and not authentic to why I wanted to make them in the first place. So it's like a dichotomy that I'm still like kind of struggling with. In Cuba, it was not business oriented at all. It was completely on the creative, for me, specializing in direction. And in Trinidad, it was just business, because everyone who comes out of the film program in Trinidad, they go into marketing, making commercial work and stuff like that until they are able to find a way to make a film. But by that time, they are so completely changed because their whole perspective changes doing commercial work all the time. Because I feel like when people do just commercial work and marketing and these kind of things, and they are not like living life, they can't like tell stories about real life because they are just always focused on shooting and capturing something that is very fake, which is another reason why I like nonfiction so much and working with non-actors, because I try to capture as authentic things as possible and not make it too staged and performative and stuff like that, which is what I think many Trinidadians do when they make films. They make it very theatrical, especially because a lot of the actors come from theater as well. So I mean, yeah, that's how I see it right now.
I wonder if, as you say, Amir, you know, people graduate from the film school in Trinidad and, you know, they go immediately into commercial work because that's what's there. But Miriam, and I'm not, you know, meaning to imply, Miriam, that it's easy, you know, to make films, even in Canada with this, you know, state system, you know, of support that exists. You've got a system, you know, and there is state funding, but there are also things like grants, you know, from organizations, and you are just a recipient of, you know, of a fellowship from Union Docs, which, you know, comes with funding, you know, which allows you the time to be able to, not have to worry about material things for a bit, maybe, you know, and you can focus on your art. And I wonder if, you know, if you know, that's one of the things that, you know, being based where you are, you know, affords you the opportunity to do things that, you know, Amir, for 3 years in Cuba, had the opportunity to do that because he was at school, now it's a different thing that, you know, he's back in Trinidad. So, you know, this question of access to opportunities, you know, for Amir to be able to now, you know, go on to make more films and so on, you know, Amir, will you have to maybe leave Trinidad to, you know, try to go to North America or come to Europe to, you know, access things? Or being based in Trinidad, but still with the way the world is changing now, I mean, this podcast is linking us all together from, you know, different sides of the Atlantic and different hemispheres. If you can still be based in Trinidad and still access opportunities at film festivals and fellowships elsewhere, and, you know, how do both of you see, you know, that whole system of filmmaking opportunities for people who aren't working commercially, like, you know, people making conventional films, you know, things like festivals and festival workshops and industry, you know, opportunities and fellowships and so on. These are the lifeblood, you know, so often of independent artists and filmmakers. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Miriam, maybe you could.
You know, like you say, I'm very lucky to, you know, to have grew up in Canada, because we have like different kind of fundings. I can get supported by the province of Quebec and also by, you know, Canada. And the thing is, if that didn't exist, I wouldn't be a filmmaker in a way that, like I said, I'm shy, so I don't do like pitch. I don't, you know, pitch project, but I do it well on paper. You know, to in Canada, you just have to write a proposal, and you never actually meet anybody. You send it, and then if they like it, they fund it. So that for me, it was like the perfect like model. Like I spent a few weeks writing my proposal, and then you send an email, and 2 months later, you receive a yes or no. And that's how I funded my first, you know, films. You talked a little bit about access. I had a distributor who knew, you know, who knew film programmer. He sent my film because I wouldn't be able to do it on my own, you know, send films first, not because I didn't want to, but because I was, you know, also working. So I didn't really have the time to invest. And my film went to festivals, and then people started to contact me, and now I have even more, you know, access to other possibilities. So and over the world. So like you said, everything is now you can apply to grant or funding, not only in Canada, but, you know, over the world. So I take a little bit of time to see what is available everywhere, and mainly because I want to do film in a certain way. Even my project with Netflix, I'm doing it my way. It's gonna be a weird.
That's what they all say. That's what they all say.
Yeah, but the thing is, I have to be. You know. Life is, in a way, it's short. You can die anytime. So I have to love what I'm not going to compromise, and I could walk away from it. No problem. If it's not, you know, because, you know.
Well, I just hope you have Final Cut in the contract.
Yeah.
But Amir, I mean, you've not been long back in Trinidad now from Cuba. I don't know if you've started on a project there yet or what, but I mean, how do you see, you know, your future in terms of, you know, access to the resources that you will need to, because even with the way you work, you still need, you know, resources to be able to make a film you would like to make. And I'm sure you'd like to, you know, do something feature length at some point after, you know, working with shorts for so long. You probably have ideas, scripts, who knows, right? I mean, what do you think, you know, needs to happen for you, given that you are in Trinidad, where, you know, direct or immediate access to a lot of the opportunities that, you know, say Miriam has, you know, you don't directly have?
Yeah, well, first of all, since I came back from Cuba, I left Cuba without finishing my thesis film because of the COVID situation. We had to leave just before we got to complete our thesis films. And I was one of the lucky ones who actually was able to shoot a thesis film. So right now, I'm just starting back to finish the post-production of that. So I'm just trying to focus on that alone, one thing at a time. After I finish that, then I'll feel like I can like move on and try to like focus on a film in Trinidad to try and connect back with people in Trinidad to tell a story. Because I felt like since I came back in Trinidad last year, I still haven't seen the majority of my friends, still haven't seen so much of my family because we were so locked down. I still didn't have like much freedom to like get to know my country in a way that I thought I would coming back from Cuba after 3 years. So I still haven't like immersed myself so much in this culture now, because the person who I am now is completely different to the person who I was before I left for Cuba. So like I'm seeing Trinidad with new eyes, seeing a different country as well, because the country would have changed in 3 years. So after I finished that thesis film, my last film from Cuba, then I would see what else I want to do. But in terms of like looking in Trinidad to try and access funds, grants and stuff, I don't know. Like I had a film in Trinidad and Tobago Film Festival this year. So I took the opportunity to like learn a little bit more about the people who were here, the industry events and stuff like that. And it's difficult because, but I'll give you one example. The Trinidad and Tobago Film Festival had an event this year, Locarno Film Festival, brought their Open Doors film program. They came to promote their Open Doors industry event. So I went and Trinidad and Tobago directors weren't eligible. So they came to the Trinidad and Tobago Film Festival to promote a program where Trinidad directors aren't eligible. In the list of Caribbean countries, Trinidad and Tobago weren't there, but they came to Trinidad and Tobago Film Festival to promote it. So, I mean, if I can't depend on here to find opportunities, like I have to look elsewhere, but I don't have a problem doing that. Like I know a lot of people who are diehard, only local, only find funds here, don't go anywhere else because it will like make you somebody else. They wanna like they keep it home in a sense. They feel a kind of way going elsewhere. They feel like they are being unpatriotic or something. But the way I see it is the better I become using the world as a resource and not just being limited to here, the better off I will be as a resource to here. Because when I was in Cuba, it was all about learning from elsewhere. Because in Cuba, like I said, I met people from all over the world. And when I come back to Trinidad, it's more about what I can give back, less about what like I can gain here and more about what I can give back here. So the way I see it, maybe I'll go elsewhere and get the resources to do what I want to do and come back here and help people to find a way to do the same. And in that way, I think as a collective, many other persons will be able to like break through. And because I think people from Trinidad don't realize how small Trinidad is. Trinidad is a country, Trinidad and Tobago is a country of 1.3 million people. When I was living in Cuba, Havana was bigger than Trinidad. And most of my friends were living in cities bigger than my entire country. But when I was living in Trinidad, here felt like the biggest place. Here felt so big. And then you realize the world is so small when you like open up your perspective a little bit. So I'm not sure yet. After I finish this thesis film, I'll look to see on what I can do. But I don't want to like limit myself. I like to be open to different possibilities.
And, you know, just to be clear, we don't want to be critical of any, you know, international film festivals. But this is something important because, you know, you mentioned this particular program, you know, and it is common to a number of other development initiatives in not only film, but in the arts and in general, where access to funding, if you are in the so-called third world or, you know, the developing world, is linked to an economic index. And what these organizations, you know, in Europe mostly, what they do is they look at the per capita GDP of countries, and if the per capita GDP is above a certain level, then your country is not eligible for funding and you're not eligible to apply for certain funds, which creates the ironic situation where a country like Trinidad, that's relatively wealthy economically, but in terms of, you know, the distribution of the wealth, it's not great, right? But the average, you know, income is of a certain level. So that means that you can't apply, even though you personally could do with the funding, you know? Whereas a country like, say, Mexico doesn't have as high, you know, an average income, you know, but, you know, wealthy auteurs can access that funding because they come from that country. It's a situation that needs to be addressed. If anybody listening to this podcast, you know, is in a position to be able to help with that, then please do. Yeah, but you know, we want to acknowledge that these things are important and these opportunities are so necessary for filmmakers from places like the Caribbean to be able to, you know, make the work that they want to make the work that needs to be seen, you know, and for filmmakers like Amir and Miriam to be able to, you know, flower and express themselves to the full extent that they can. I think we're going to wrap it up now because, you know, we've had a nice conversation. We don't want to, you know, wear out our welcome here and our listeners. But I want to just, you know, thank you both so much for taking the time to chat with me. We've really, I think, you know, touched on so many interesting points, and I'm sure, you know, these conversations will continue. Conversations like this will continue, and we'll be able to talk more about, you know, things that need to be talked about that I don't think, particularly when it comes to Caribbean cinema, don't think get spoken about enough. And you know, we want to thank Doc Leipzig for providing, you know, the space for us to be able to have this conversation, and hopefully we'll be able to have more such conversations in the future. But I want to thank both of you again for joining us. Best of luck, Amir, with completing your thesis film. I look forward to seeing it. Miriam, I know you've got, you know, several films in pre-production and post-production. You know, you're very busy. So again, thank you for taking the time to join us today. And yeah, we look forward to seeing more of your work, both of your work, and you know, getting Caribbean cinema that I think is the kind of cinema that we need to see more of, you know, seen. So thank you both very much.
Thank you.